Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, September 12th. Coming up today, we'll hear from the man in charge of transport in Kent over concerns about plans to bring bus services under more local control. We'll also hear from the man who led the investigation into the murder of a Kent PCSO as he retires. But first, taking a look at our top story, it's been revealed a Maidstone man who was killed in a crash had taken cocaine before the collision. Nicola has been following this story for the Kent Online podcast. She joins me now. Nicola, thank you for your time. First of all, what do we know about the crash?
Well, after months of investigation, we now know 32-year-old Tommy Dunn was driving along Waterbury Road heading towards East Malling at around 7:45 in the morning on October the 27th last year. His Astra hit a curb before losing control, veering across the road and heading into oncoming traffic. His car collided with a Land Rover and he died at the scene from injuries to his head, chest and pelvis. The other driver survived. Police were initially looking for another person involved as Tommy was actually found in the passenger seat, but they've now concluded he was the driver and was thrown to that side of the car during the crash.
And police have now revealed he'd taken cocaine just hours before the collision.
That's right. According to his partner at the time, Tommy had taken 8 lines of cocaine and left the property at about 6:30 in the morning without getting much sleep. A forensic collision investigator later said the toxicology report for Mr. Dunn showed the highest level of cocaine he's ever seen in a driver. Data taken from his phone also showed he'd been using it in the minutes or seconds before the crash. The coroner concluded the death was a drug-related road traffic collision.
And I believe some members of his family attended the hearing and have been paying tribute.
Yes, Tommy has been described as a loving uncle, brother and son. He was a keen boxer and was loved by everyone at TKO Maidstone where he trained. He was known for helping others at the gym and for always having a smile on his face.
Thanks, Nick.
Kent Online News.
A convicted sex offender from Ramsgate who shared child abuse images on social media has avoided prison. John Daly admitted several offences after police raided his home on Manston Road in May last year. The 58-year-old has been given a suspended sentence. He'll also have to do 150 hours of unpaid work and take part in a rehab program. A motorcyclist is in a serious condition after a crash in Gillingham. Police and paramedics were called to the collision just after midnight. It happened on Gillingham Road near the junction with Duncan Road. The biker has been taken to a London hospital for treatment. A man's been fined after his dog bit a neighbour in Rochester. The victim was left with a bruise and teeth marks following the attack by a staffy type in April. The dog also bit the trouser leg of a police officer who was sent to investigate. The owner's been ordered to pay more than £300. Three fire engines have been called to tackle a blaze at a house in Tunbridge Wells. It broke out in Redleaf Close yesterday. Support's been offered to residents who were affected. No one was hurt and it's unclear how it started. Now, the man who led the investigation into the murder of a Kent PCSO has praised his whole team as he retires. Detective Superintendent Gavin Moss has served with the force in the county for more than 30 years. He was in charge of finding the killer of Julia James, who was murdered while out walking her dog in April 2021.
For 7 days, I didn't have a clue who was responsible for Julia's murder. And that again, you know, I wasn't getting pressure from the chief officer team. I was making that pressure myself because I wanted so desperately to find who was responsible, as were my team. And, you know, it really was a case that making sure we did everything, we put everything in place. But the breakthrough was getting that photograph. We'd also had an e-fit that Paul did about a sighting he and Julia had of this male. And then when you put the two together, straight away I said, he's done it. You know, and then it was a case of finding who we now know was Callum Wheeler, how we were going to go about that. But fortunately, we got that breakthrough from an identification, and then as a result of that, he was arrested, then charged and convicted. Mm. And Julia's family got justice. And I did say to Julia's family, and the first visit I ever had with them was that, and I say this to all families because I genuinely believe it, I can never guarantee a conviction because I just simply cannot. But what I can guarantee is a very thorough and a very professional investigation because I know what my staff are capable of doing. I know if they've got that structure that I spoke about earlier, then they will themselves see and be committed and they've got that to work to. And that's why I'd like to think, it wasn't Gavin Moss who detected the murder of Julia James. It really wasn't. It was everybody involved. We had in total 1,100 members of staff, police officers and staff, and that included mutual aid people. Everybody was so committed, and I'm incredibly proud of everybody who worked on that investigation.
You can read more about some of the cases he's been involved with in the story on our website.
Kent Online News.
The MP for East Thanet has questioned the new government on how they plan to restore faith in the criminal justice system. Polly Billington says knife crime and antisocial behaviour in her constituency continue because victims are too scared to give evidence. She's addressed the Commons, and Solicitor General Sarah Sackman has given a reply.
Polly Billington.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm grateful to my honourable friend's reply. What we notice, particularly in town centres like Ramsgate and Margate, is that antisocial behaviour, drug dealing and street crime, particularly knife crime and so forth, continues because of people's anxiety about giving evidence against the criminals. What will my right honourable friend and the government do to be able to give people confidence that the criminal justice system and the prosecutions will flow once they are given their evidence?
Just this week, we know that the Prime Minister met with police, victims' families and media companies to discuss the specific issue of knife crime which plagues her community and many communities across the country. He has promised to double down on these crimes and to halve them in the next decade, and I'm part of a cross-departmental team who will work to deliver this. The government is committed to taking back our streets, whether in terms of increasing the numbers of neighbourhood policing, recruiting more prosecutors to deal swiftly with these crimes, and bringing forward laws to ban zombie knives and machetes.
Kent Online News.
The man in charge of transport in Kent has raised concerns about plans to bring bus services under more local control. A government bill is aiming to give councils the power to set routes, fares and schedules, as well as creating franchises. But bosses are worried it won't come with any extra funding to resolve issues. Conservative Neil Baker is the cabinet member for transport at KCC.
Clearly the devil's going to be in the detail. I mean, at the moment, a lot of people think I am the fat controller of buses in Kent because, well, we've had a deregulated bus system for decades now. That's not always clear. My fear is that the public expectation may be raised about what councils could do, but there's been no indication that central government will transfer any funds to allow us to do that. And I think that would be the worst of both worlds, where we have the theoretical ability to do something, which is improve buses, which we'd all like to do, but no extra funds to do it. And with our current financial position, I cannot see how we could deliver that in any reasonable way.
Vince Maple is the Labour leader of Medway Council.
We know there are examples, longer term examples, before the law changed under the Conservatives, where councils have run bus services and the profits that come from that go back into council services. That's a positive approach to public transport. And we'll certainly be playing our part in the consultation, because longer term, we've got to have a system which works for people. For too long, the bus services have not worked for the residents of Medway and indeed across the county.
Work started on filling in a part of the Western Docks in Dover to make space for when new checks come in for passengers. The entry-exit system is set to launch in November for anyone from outside the EU travelling to Europe. More land is being made available at the port to try and ease congestion on the roads after fears it could lead to lengthy tailbacks. The Dartford MP is calling for residents living near the new Silvertown Tunnel to get a discount. When finished, it'll run under the Thames from the Greenwich Peninsula to near London City Airport. Jim Dixon says people in his constituency should get money off for using it rather than just those living in London boroughs. Events are being held over the next few weeks to give people in Gravesend and Dartford more information about the Lower Thames crossing. Plans for a new road tunnel between Kent and Essex have been in the works for 15 years, and a decision on the application is due to be considered by the government next month. National Highways will be holding community consultations in shopping centres and leisure centres to answer residents' questions. Parents and carers in Kent now have access to autism workshops to help them gain access to information and support. The NHS sessions focus on understanding autism, behaviour, anxiety and sleep, and help families implement change before receiving a diagnosis. Angela lives in West Kent. She's been attending the sessions. She says the changes they've made have been life-changing for her 12-year-old daughter.
I joined the workshops because my child's 12 years old. She was pre-assessed as being autistic and we were waiting for the final assessment. And she'd gone through CAMS for anxiety and OCD, and they helped her with cognitive behavioural therapy. And nearing the end of that, they discussed autism and how it affects every part of her life, from the time she wakes up, everything in between, to going to sleep and staying asleep. And the workshops really look at everything from behaviour to sleep and everything in between. So I have learned so much from it. And it can be small things to implement at home, like that's made a huge difference. And she's now sleeping 6 hours solid, which for us is amazing since she's never slept that long in 12 years.
And I imagine for her as well, it must feel sort of liberating now to sort of think that, okay, people can understand the things that are happening for her, and it just must make home life a bit more comfortable.
Yeah, she felt accepted and she felt she could just be herself and validated, and that she is this way and that's okay. And she feels happy now to wear her ear defenders at school and in the shopping centres and whenever she needs it, even at the dinner table, if she doesn't like the sound of chewing or anything else upsetting her, she knows she can do that. She doesn't have to mask all the time. And it's been so freeing for her, and just to know she's not alone. And we know as parents, we're not alone, that other parents are going through the same things or similar experiences. It's been a really supportive thing for me to go to these workshops, just to hear other parents talking about what they're struggling with, and realizing although each situation is so unique for everyone, that we're all going through similar things. And it really helps to hear their questions as well during the workshops, as well as being able to ask questions from the professionals.
Dr. Joshua Neese is a clinical psychologist.
We're really keen to improve access to our services and to our team and our clinicians. And we've been looking at kind of innovative and creative ways of doing that, because there are locally and nationally long waiting lists to access things like autism and neurodiversity assessments. So what we've done is through the last couple of years is develop a set of workshops and drop-ins where people can access information that will be helpful to them and their family, and drop-ins where they can meet not only NHS staff, but also people from the Kent Autistic Trust, from IASC, or an information support advice service for education, and a representative from education from Kent County Council.
You mentioned there about long wait lists. Would you have any idea of how long people are waiting for access to support services?
Yeah, sadly, people are waiting many years for assessments, and it's not a situation that anybody within the system is happy with. And we're all working really hard to try and support parents both whilst they're waiting and to try and increase the number of assessments that we're completing.
I imagine if you are a parent or a carer for a child with autism, it can be quite overwhelming. I imagine there's a wealth of information out there, not all of it accurate. Some of it may be misleading. The resources and the techniques and things that are covered in the workshop, where have they come from? Are they research-based? Is that where it comes
Absolutely.
From?
Absolutely. Yeah, so we're really keen to use evidence-based information. What's also really important for us is that we are neuroaffirmative. So the way that we understand the differences between people is changing, and it's changing rapidly. And what autism and neurodiversity and neurodivergence mean has changed dramatically over recent decades. So what we want to be is affirming, positive, and embracing people's differences, to sort of accept, to listen and connect with them in a meaningful way, and to help support people with evidence-based interventions and the best support that we can offer.
Latest figures suggest in Kent alone, there are 9,000 children waiting for an autism assessment. A couple from Faversham whose baby daughter passed away have raised almost £1,000 for a hospital bereavement suite. The Twinkling Stars facility at the William Harvey in Ashford allows bereaved mums and dads to spend time with their baby. Ben Hunt and Lucy Hook did a 10-mile walk in Evie's memory.
Kent Online News.
More than 200 jobs are going at a manufacturing plant in Kent. The Belgian-based owner of Marley Plumbing and Drainage warned staff back in June that its site in Lenham could be closing. Staff will be leaving between now and the end of the year. A protest is being held outside County Hall in Maidstone over changes to disability payments. KCC want people to contribute a lot more to the cost of care and accommodation. Reporter Simon Finlay has been speaking to Bernadette John, who's worried about the impact it'll have on those who are vulnerable.
Well, I'm here because my disabled son stands to lose £35 a week from his benefits. That represents £1,800 a year. So in a week when there's a huge outcry about pensioners losing £300 on winter fuel allowances and the deaths that will ensue from that, you can see why £1,800 a year, six times that, is a very severe prospect.
A council meeting is being held today as bosses look for ways to balance their books. Bosses in Folkestone have officially backed calls for the town's library to remain in its current building. The county council are consulting on plans to move the facility away from the Grace Hill site, which has been closed since 2022. The local authority covering the town say their preferred option is for the building to be repaired and reopened. A major project to revamp part of Canterbury has now been pushed back. We're told building work on a new public square will be finished between April and November next year, while a renovation of the Dane John Gardens will be completed the following January. The City Council was awarded almost £20 million of government levelling up cash to pay for it. It's been confirmed a former shop in Canterbury that's been empty for almost 5 years is set to be taken over by Next and Costa. The former Mothercare on the Wincheap retail park has been vacant since the company collapsed in 2020. Plans have been submitted to the council and it's hoped it'll open next spring.
Kent Online News.
Thousands of Year 6 children across the county are sitting the Kent test today. It'll determine who can apply for a place at a grammar school next year. Results will be out on the 17th of October. Now, would you believe it's a year since Wilko stores across Kent started closing? The retail giant had announced the previous month it had gone bust with the loss of 12,500 jobs across the country. Out of the 15 shops in the county, 7 have been filled, but the others remain closed. Piers Morgan is backing a community group who are hoping to save a 500-year-old Kent pub. The Swan on the Green in West Peckham, featured in ITV's The Larkins. Shares in the building are now being made available to try and raise enough money to keep it open. And a piece of art found at a Kent rubbish dump will go up for auction next week. The 500-year-old German Renaissance engraving was salvaged by Matt Winter when he was just 11 years old. He kept it in his shed for 13 years before recently having it appraised. I've been speaking to Matt. He says he's always had an eye for antiques.
I started at 10 years old going to the local tip. And then when I was 11, I found this in the back of a car. And I asked the lady for it, and she said, yes, you can have it. She was more than happy for me to take it. And then I just kept it in my shed for 13 years. And then something always told me that it was something worth money, you know. And then I decided last year to get it tested. And it come back, and it was, you know, all great.
I think in the press release that I was reading, they said you've always had an interest in antiques.
I've always liked old antique stuff. You know, I used to have a little shed and always pretended when I was a little kid, always pretended that I had a little antique shop. So I used to put little price tags on everything, pretending that I was selling it. And then I decided, because you have them little phases when you get up younger, don't you?
Is that something that's come from your family? Are your family particularly interested in antiques or anything like that? Or is this something that
something that I just got into.
Now, what made you keep it? You said that you had a suspicion that it was worth a little bit of money. What was it about it that made you think it was special?
I don't know. It was so much about the detail of it. You know, if you look at it, you've got so much detail. And then something told me, keep it. Something special about it.
I was reading that I think they have set a guide price for it for between £10,000 and £20,000, but yeah. it could end up going for a lot more than that. What happens to that money? Do you get that money?
Yeah.
Have you had a think about what you might do with it? If you know when it comes to
obviously, I can't really say at the minute because I don't know, you know, what it's going to make. But hopefully, I might probably buy a new car or something like that.
And have you gone back into your shed and tried to look at any other pieces that you've picked up that you think that they might be worth something?
Yeah, I've got. I'm going to make another arrangement with someone else to, you know, have a look at other stuff I've got.
What sort of things have you got in your shed?
I've got a lot more drawings, paintings, clocks, a lot of chinaware, furniture. You know, it's really jammed though, isn't it? I mean, where it started out was a little, you know, somehow shed. And then it started out, and then afterwards I had to buy a bigger shed. And now I've got a 40-foot container.
The piece will be auctioned off next week with a guide price of between £10,000 and £20,000. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.